This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U-Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mokhtar. When the Memorandum of Understanding for Political Transformation and Stability, or the MOU as it's known, when it was signed 6 months ago between the federal government and opposition coalition Pakatan Harapan, it appeared to herald a new chapter in Malaysian politics. In exchange for several COVID-19 policy measures and a series of institutional political reforms by the government, Pakatan Harapan agreed to refrain from voting on any confidence measure against the government before the end of July 2022. However, developments in Parliament over the past few weeks threatened to derail this historic but uneasy truce. Has this experiment in Malaysian coalition politics failed? We hear the perspectives from our panel this morning. With me are YB Wong Chen, Member of Parliament for Subang, and Dr. Wong Chin Huat, Professor at the Jeffrey Sachs Centre on Sustainable Development. Gentlemen, good morning. Thanks for joining me today.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
So, Wong Chen, you were heavily involved in drafting this agreement. You know this deal inside out. Several prominent UMNO MPs have said that Pakatan Harapan violated the terms of the MOU when it voted against a government motion in Parliament on Wednesday, and this motion was defeated. Are they wrong?
They're absolutely wrong. They have to read the actual provision carefully. The provision provides where if there's a motion or legislation that needs to be passed, that is crucial. The government's first step is to negotiate and talk to us and brief us what is it they want to do. So in the SOSMA case, they didn't. They just brought it in. So that early condition or precondition wasn't met. Therefore, we're not going to support this because this is really, it's anti-human rights. So their reading is obviously skewed. They have not read it. In fact, when YB Katera raised the issue, it was actually, I understood that he was actually in the drafting team. So I think it's just a bit malicious on their side. To politicize the issue. We didn't break anything. If anything, they have not met the MOU's terms to deliver the anti-hopping law by latest yesterday.
Chinua, I want to bring you in on this quickly, because if we look at the wording of the MOU, it did mention that the bills that the opposition party are supposed to support or refrain from is on confidence measures, essentially. So maybe you could help us understand what exactly is a confidence, what that means. Is it any kind of bill that is proposed by the government in Parliament? If that fails, then, the government has lost confidence.
No. The idea that the government must not fail its bill, otherwise the confidence that the Parliament has in the government is threatened, is a very old idea. The last time in UK history, the last time a government threatened the Parliament and say, pass this bill, otherwise I consider that you are losing confidence in me and I will resign, that happened during the war. It was done by Winston Churchill. So it's a pre-war idea, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we you look at Theresa May government, that the government failed the Brexit vote for five times and only resign on the fifth. So it's really not something that say, and you feel any bill, then you need to resign, because we no longer bundle everything with the government and say a government in power must have the right to pass every bill or motion. No, it's no longer that case. You don't have to wait, endure with the government mistake and so on. So Parliament is supposed to check and correct. That's the modern idea. So I'm very happy that this was done.
Okay. So in that case, Chin Huat, you don't agree with the argument that's being put forth by Rengas MP Datuk Sri Nazir Aziz that the loss of the bloc vote on Wednesday is tantamount to losing the confidence of the House. But can you help us understand then what is a vote that would amount to losing confidence of the House?
Now, if the government say it very clearly and say you have to vote for this vote, vote for this bill or this motion, otherwise I will consider that lose my confidence, then that's the case.
Okay.
And so really the first thing that happened here is the government never say that SOSMA is such a case. If it's so, then you go back to what Wong Chen said, they should have the negotiation with the opposition.
Okay, so in that, so if I understand correctly, the government needs to clarify that this is an important bill that will determine whether we lose confidence or not. I take it that the budget vote is typically seen, though, as an automatic confidence vote. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so that's the only measure. That's the only measure where it can be seen as automatically a confidence vote. Anything else needs to be specified by the government of the day.
Yeah.
That is good to clarify. Wong Chen, earlier you had mentioned, you had said that the Pakatan Harapan did not violate the terms of the MOU. If anything, it was the government for failing, the government failed to hold up its end of the deal by not tabling this anti-hopping bill during the first session of parliament. We'll go into the specifics of anti-hopping in just a bit, but I want to ask you first whether Harapan is prepared for the fallout if this MOU fails at this point. Is Pakatan Harapan prepared to walk out if the anti-hopping if the anti-hopping bill isn't passed in April when this special sitting is due to be held?
Absolutely. But we are very confident it will pass because, you know, I mean, what you read out there and what is really happening in parliament and in politics is that the vast majority of MPs actually support an anti-hopping law because all of them have suffered. UMNO included, ourselves, PKR, PH. There's only one little party in there that is against the anti-hopping law. I don't want to mention their name, but they're
sure
in the government coalition.
Okay.
Right? So it's a political problem. It's not a legal problem. And it's not a moral problem or a political will problem. It's an internal coalition problem in the government. And to be fair, Pakatan Harapan has been very understanding because we understand politics. So when they wanted an extension and to retable this on the 11th of April, I think we should give them a chance because it's so crucial for the country to move forward on this.
Okay. So the red line is the anti-hopping bill. Pakatan Harapan is prepared to walk away in April if it's not passed, I suppose. But isn't it within Harapan's best interest for this MOU to actually hold until the end of July? We have heard some proposals from within Pakatan Harapan that they actually may want to see this MOU extended further. I mean, at this stage, wouldn't having this MOU, this truce, be better for Pakatan Harapan than taking it out?
No. For me, it's very clear. What we really, really need in this country, and I'm sure Professor Chinwat will totally agree with me, is the Parliamentary Services Act, right? That's the one that is so fundamental. People don't understand this concept. So to me, that is supposed to be delivered in July. Let's get that done. That's important for the country. I mean, it's important for all our you know, grandchildren and everybody else. So I would consider that to be the big one. The anti-hopping is important, but not as crucial as the Parliamentary Services Act. All other considerations after that, political maneuvering. Look, I'm not at of that pay grade to negotiate this kind of thing. But for as a technocrat, it's very clear where we should end this this MOU. I think July will be good because that's what we agreed on. And for God's sake, once you put aside all the political stuff, people really want to have a new government that is relatively stable moving forward. So to me, as a technocrat within Pakatan Harapan, July is the deadline and the Parliamentary Services Act is the ultimate milestone.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll come back to that. But Chinwat, I want to ask your opinion. Given that we're seeing a lot of government-aligned MPs that have been calling for this MOU to be, for the government to walk away from the MOU, what can we read from the fact that they're either confused about it or they're purposely misunderstanding what this MOU entails? You know, we see it's the UMNO MPs that are the loudest naysayers, and they ostensibly have the most to gain from the collapse of this MOU, as it could lead to the snap polls that many parts of that party are desiring. Do you think that this points to fissures within the government of Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri, which comprise hostile parties even as they are within the ruling coalition itself? You know, is the matter of the MOU really an internal party matter within the government coalition?
Well, there are two groups of people that blame this MOU, blame the defeat on the Sosma Wood on as a defeat of the MOU. And you can differentiate in two ways. One, the first group think that the opposition must give the governments a free way to go through, regardless of what. The second group would just simply want to tear it down no matter what. Mm. And you go back to the first group, the idea is ridiculous. The government has an excess of 12 votes in the House, meaning they can have 11 more people, MPs who are absent, and still pass any bill to demand that, say, whatever our bill must pass is basically to say the government, due to this MOU, has the right to have as many absentees as possible. Now, that's ridiculous. Mm. But come back to MOU, they want to bring it down because they think that the government would be, the opposition would be crushed, as just what you see in Malacca and Johor. But I think that really come back to whether the final outcome would depend on the largest party in town. It's not BN, it's Parti Aku Malas Undi, PAMU. So if those people want to come out to vote, it would change the picture entirely. And I agree with Wong Chen that we need to fix this before you have the next government coming in, because the next parliament may return a one-party, one-predominant coalitions or another hung parliament. And if you don't fix this, the system is susceptible to more instabilities in either of that scenarios.
I'm speaking to YB Wong Chen, MP for Subang, and political scientist Dr. Wong Chin Huat on the state of play of the political MOU between the government and Pakatan Harapan. When we come back, we'll dive into the anti-hopping bill and what kind of shape that it should take in order for the best political environment for the country. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
This is The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, and today I'm speaking to YB Wong Chen, Member of Parliament for Subang, and Dr. Wong Chin Huat, Professor at the Jeffrey Sachs Centre on Sustainable Development. Chin Huat, Bersih and other NGOs staged a protest at Parliament this week calling for the anti-hopping bill to be tabled as soon as possible. In fact, we spoke to you a month ago in February, and back then you sounded fairly optimistic that this bill would be tabled in this March sitting. What do you think changed between then and now on this?
Well, if you look at the number, the bill certainly would have a two-third majority to be passed. PH and Muda has 91 votes, BN has 42 votes, and GPS has 18 votes. Add together, you have 151, 3 votes more than what is necessary. The reason why this is held back, I think, is Prime Minister Ismail Sabri wants to preserve the image that his government is intact, that you would not have some component parties vote against this and so on. But ultimately, he would need to deliver this. Otherwise, he will lose. And I think for Bersatu and PAS, they really have to sign up to one form of anti-hopping law or the other.
Hmm. Wong Chen, can I ask, has there been any engagement with the opposition on this bill so far in the 6 months since the signing of the MOU? I suppose, how have Pakatan Harapan been consulted in this drafting process?
Okay, the MOU creates a steering committee. The steering committee then creates a technical committee. So we have very senior lawyers from Kadilan in there. I'm not one of them to do this matter. I'm looking at budget mostly and standing on the matters and select committees.
Hmm.
So they've been having a lot of meetings. And bear in mind, the meetings include people or counsels from the Attorney General office. So these are not, you know, kopitiam meeting. These are like really serious meeting. And it's been going on. And Wan Junaidi, to his credit, is a very good law minister. And it's pretty honorable for a politician, you know. So it's been going on. And these meetings have been, you know, blocked or been slowed by the political dealings within the coalition in the government, which is what Chin Wan just said, right? It is really about Bersatu and PAS. They are feeling very difficult to accept this because in particular Bersatu, because Bersatu essentially are made of predominantly of hoppers. So, you know, an admission to this or the acceptance of an anti-hopping law could backfire on them politically or perception-wise in the public. So it's going on, and I know of the meeting happening on as late as Wednesday night, right? And it's still ongoing. But I'm quite positive that they will have to turn around somewhere at one point in April. And I'm sure we will get it done in April with or without PAS and Bersatu.
Wong Chen, you mentioned Bersatu as the, party hopping party. But PKR itself, I think you could also be seen as a poster child for defections. Yeah, the crossover of PKR MPs to Bersatu was one of the reasons for the collapse of the PH government. So I'm wondering, I mean, is the desire for an anti-hopping law motivated by this in some way? Is that what PKR is? That's why you're kind of pushing for this? It's a form of revenge? I don't know.
No. I mean, look, we've all been victims of anti-hopping. PKR more so because of the Sheraton move. But we've had defectors in Sabah for the longest time. I mean, Sabah politics is such that, you know, it's really, they're like the, I would say that they're the founding members of hopping. But history shows that a lot of those hopping do happen in Sabah. So yes, PKR is upset about all this hopping. But there have been occasions as well, I have to be fair, that people have hopped into our party too. What we know is hopping, whether it so-called benefits us in the short term or hurts us greatly in the long term, it's just bad because people look at it badly. So if we, if any party out there thinks that allowing people to hop into their party can be beneficial in the short term, they will see that the voters have turned against them. And this is really what's happening in Malaysia. So it needs to be done, yeah, for the sake of stability in Malaysia.
I'm wondering if there's been any internal discussion on within PKR on why it doesn't seem to hold loyalty of its members. I mean, does this point to some kind of flaw within the party itself?
No, I mean, the anti-hopping issue, I mean, we have mechanisms such as, a sort of anti-hopping bond, but that's not been very effective. PKR is a bit strange. I mean, I've been in the party for more than 10 years now. We're multiracial. So, like, really, really multiracial. You know, we're not pretend multiracial. And in this kind of situation, it's really strange to see how camps can form itself, but they all have components of Malay, Indian, and Chinese, you know? So, PKR is a very healthy, very, very combative, internal combative party. So that's the way I would describe it. It's not monolithic as a block. And that's where the democracy becomes really interesting within the party itself. So as a result, I suppose, when personalities come into play, there's a tendency to hop when one side loses.
Okay, interesting there.
If I may come in, I think that all parties are susceptible to defections, with some exceptions like PAS and DAP, where their constituencies are much more unforgiving. Reason why, that any parties that's out of government, that you easily can be lured to join the government, or some people want to bring down a government and put up a new government so that they can become ministers and so on.
Okay, so there's that political bait of sorts that it's just the way our system works at the moment, right?
Yes.
We'll get into that in a little bit. I want to come back to this anti-hopping bill, right? So correct me if I'm wrong. We haven't really seen the draft bill yet, but the understanding is that the law will take the form of a traditional anti-hopping bill, which penalizes any MP that leaves or is thrown out of their party. Now, Chin Huat, this is a far cry from the version that you and Bersi are advocating for. So you are advocating for something that would involve the recall election mechanism, right? But at the same time, Bersih believes that any anti-hopping law is better than none. So can I ask why that is? Why not just negotiate for as long as it takes for the best version of the law?
Well, the fear is that if we drag on, we may not get anything before the parliament is dissolved. That's really the point. And our concession is get this done at the federal level with the traditional one, but if Bersatu and PAS are not happy, you can always sign up for the recall one, on which Azalina has prepared a good bill. Now, but at the state level, we do not want to impose the traditional anti-hopping law on the states. We want to leave that door open so the state can choose either version.
Okay. What's stopping reform-friendly state governments like Selangor or Penang from enacting this recall election mechanism at the state level then? If either of you want to take a stab at that.
Penang has already a traditional anti-hopping law, the legality of which is under question until the federal make its amendment. But Selangor can certainly attempt one, and I would encourage you to do so if there is any problem with the federal bill.
Wong Chen, do you know if the Selangor state government is looking into this? I mean, you're not a state assemblyman, but you are an MP within Selangor. So I'm not sure what are the discussions within the broader state coalition in terms of implementing such an election recall election mechanism at the state assembly.
There have been discussion on anti-hopping, but not really recall. But as Chin Wat pointed out, they're looking for the direction from the parliament. Where the national law is passed or the constitution is amended. Because there's no point of you pushing for a law and then find out that it's against the fundamental principles in the constitution. So amend the federal first and then the state will follow. You know, Penang has gone ahead and do the state. Now they're facing a roadblock in terms of the freedom of association clauses.
The roadblock is really specifically applicable on the traditional anti-hopping law because the anti-hopping recall law is designed to skirt around that. So Selangor actually has that option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Something to look at then. Earlier, Wong Chen, you said that you see the government led by Datuk Sri Wan Junaidi, the minister, the de facto law minister, in the negotiations for the anti-hopping bill, it's you see it as being done in good faith of sorts. And Chin Huat, you were also nodding, seeing that you feel the government is negotiating in good faith. How do you see the special sitting in April playing out? At this stage, we know that the debate will begin on 11th of April. You know, what's the process like? I think everyone's just wondering, is it just going to be a day debate and then a vote? You know, will all the readings be held at one time? I'm not sure if either of you have this information, but what do you think will happen?
Okay, well, basically, it's going to be just that reading, the first reading, and then theoretically, they can't have the debate on straight away, but I think they can bypass a certain provision on that and then have the debate flow straight away. But before that, they need to give us at least a week before the 11th to look at the bill. Yeah, so that's the process. I think it's going to take a day, but we've joked around and said, look, if it's going to take 10 days, we'll do 10 days of sitting. It will take one day. Yeah.
Jin Huat?
And the bill is quite certain that you know what is going to come out, and really the decision would not lie on PKR or PH. They would all agree to that. The challenge is on Bersatu, which thinks that the bill is fundamentally against them. Now, their option is very simple. Sign up to that, or you immediately look at the recall and say, now get the rest to sign up to recall. That saves them the face. And the difference is a recall bill gives that power back to the voters. So the vacating of the seat would not be automatic unless the voters want to give signatures up to 40%.
Chin Huat, can I just clarify something that I'm confused about? Because you said that Bersatu doesn't really support the traditional anti-hopping bill because it penalizes them. But how so? Because Bersatu, as a party pulled out of a coalition, they themselves don't get penalized under a traditional hopping bill, yeah? It's really focused on just the MPs involved rather than the party.
True. As a party, they would not get penalized under this law. But many of their MPs came from that. And they were probably still hoping some from the government would join them. So to have this law, it would actually close their door. But if you have a recall bill, that means that they can jump and it's up to the voters whether or not to sign up a petition to have their seat vacated.
All right, so that's on the anti-hopping bill. We're all going to be watching on April 11th what happens, how the process is. I'm speaking to YB Wong Chen, MP for Subang, and political scientist Dr. Wong Chin Huat on issues related to the political MOU between the government and Pakatan Harapan. We will be continuing this conversation in an extended breakfast grill after the 8:30 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Good morning. You're listening to an extended edition of The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, and on the show with me today are YB Wong Chen, Member of Parliament for Subang, and Dr. Wong Chin Huat, Professor of the Jeffrey Sachs Center on Sustainable Development. We've spent the past half hour discussing recent developments that have put the MOU between the government and Pakatan Harapan in jeopardy, including the delayed tabling of the anti-hopping bill. In the remaining time that we have, though, I'd like to explore whether this MOU has actually brought any benefit to stakeholders, years, or whether this was an exercise in futility. So this is a question for both of you to address from different perspectives. What tangible benefit has come out of the MOU? So Chinhuat, has the MOU actually brought any benefit to the voting public that has been held hostage by the Malaysian political rigmarole of the past 2 years?
Yes, the immediate benefit is that you have stability. And this is something we need to prepare for if you have another hung parliament. CSA-style deals would have to be a norm as long as you have hung parliament. And secondly, this particular MOU has fixed some of our problems in the system, especially our parliament. More needs to be done. And that's why I'm all for an extension of the MOU into a 2.0.
Okay, so you are in favor of the MOU. Wong Chen, when we spoke to you the day after the MOU was first signed, you sounded confident that this deal was the right thing to do in order to achieve the political reforms that Pakatan Harapan wanted. Two state elections later, after PH was trounced by a resurgent Barisan Nasional in both Malacca and Johor, was this MOU a mistake for PH and PKR?
No, absolutely not. I mean, that's the issue about public perception about the MOU. It doesn't help when some of the opposition parties are sending the wrong understanding of the MOU to the public, you know, saying that the MOU doesn't help the country or that. I mean, it's very difficult when you do a deal with the government to carry out reforms and to then, you know, spread this news or convince people, because public perception is a big problem. In Malaysia, we've got all these keyboard warriors, right? You know? And they just want us to fight all the time. And sure, we can fight when there's no pandemic, when there's no economic crisis. Let's fight. I mean, for all, you know, I'm all in favor of all-out fighting. But the country needs reforms. And it needs fundamental reforms in its system. It needs fundamental reform in trying to get a national recovery on the economy. And it needs a pandemic to tackle the pandemic issue. So I don't think, even though whether this public perception has converted into some sort of negative election result for us, I don't think it's a big factor, to be serious.
You don't
I mean, other people, I don't think the MOU is a big factor, right? It's the political unhappiness about other things that causes the electoral loss, you know? It contributes for sure, but that's because of the wrong perception of the public, what the MOU really wants. Or aims to achieve.
Okay, so you acknowledge that the public perception is different from what Pakatan Harapan intended when it signed up to the MOU, right, for greater good. I think one of the things that wasn't mentioned is that many actually view the MOU as a selling out, or that Pakatan Harapan was giving up its principles, you know, for political survival in a way, you know, try to postpone that GE15. I want to know why there's such a mismatch between the message Pakatan Harapan thinks it's sending out versus what's being received by the public. Why this miscommunication in intentions?
Okay, can I just add before Chinhuat jumps in? I'm sure he has his views, but essentially, when we talk about public perception, are we talking about the 2%, right? Or are we talking about the 60%, the economic voters, who hates politics, who hates politicians, who just wants to see the country recover from the pandemic? So public perception out there, the keyboard warriors, those that, you know, they are very, very critical, which is ironic because they want reform and we deliver reform and they're not happy. I don't understand what they want.
So right? you think that public perception is sort of being held a host, not all out, you know, it's being dominated by the very noisy minority. Is that it?
Yes. And also they're supposed to be the intellectual class. And yet from time to time, I see their comments and they don't actually read the MOU. I mean, there are lawyers in there. I mean, I just don't understand what's going on. But there are, of course, very populist anger feelings against the government. And this is conflated into the MOU issue. For, say, 60% of the economic voters or the fence-sitters, and they're just happy the political temperature has dropped. And to be fair, the young Dipertuan Agong was absolutely correct. We have to stop quarrelling, right? We have a pandemic. We have an economic crisis. So I can't stress that. You know, sometimes I feel really angry and sad that these people don't see beyond their personal anger and what they expect politicians to do in times of a national crisis.
Chinhuat?
The discontent against this MOU is not actually just limited to these keyboard warriors and so on, but also or even just Barisan president who now turn back and want some smart action, but also some PH leaders. The reason being is they are used to a particular type of politics that is all about good versus evil. So when you talk about MOU, you transform politics from warlike ugliness into sport-like decency. You can compete, but you don't have to win all and you don't have to lose all. And many opposition leaders and supporters cannot see themselves in this new paradigm. They feel themselves are lost when you talk about policy competition. Those who don't do homework would find that they have no role to play. So they prefer to have a charging into the battlefield and kill as many people as possible. And that's really something we need to overcome. But I completely agree with Wang Chen that today you have to deal with people who get fed up with politics. The biggest party that PH or others should steal votes from is not each other, but PAMU, Parti Aku Malas Undi.
You've mentioned PAMU before, Chin Huat, and I actually really like that analogy you give about how we want to see the political system change from a war into a sport, where, you know, there are these rules that, you know, a side can win or lose, but ultimately gamesmanship is what's what's prioritized. And you, as you mentioned earlier, you're a big believer in coalition politics. You view the MOU as a sign of a maturing democracy, that we're progressing towards a political system that actually functions for the people as opposed to the politicians. What do you think needs to happen for this dynamic to stay viable? Because we are seeing that with the overwhelming victories of Barisan Nasional and UMNO at the state elections, it just feels like a large segment of the public or stakeholders, they're not ready to accept the seesaw that comes with coalition politics.
Well, many people don't understand what MOU is, and that contribute to part of the growth of PAMU. The number was 34% in Malacca and 45% in Johor. It may stay on around 40, 50% in the next election. And if anything to change, if you want to see this going on, they need to come out. They need to pick one of these party and send a message that I want you to compete on policy. And I think what happened on Wednesday with the defeat of the SOSMA motion is a good sign. People can see that you have an opposition that would preserve the government. They do not take the advantage and say, now Ismail has lost. But they reject what they do not consider as reasonable. And it also gives an incentive for MPs to turn out, because there are MPs who think that, well, you know, whatever bill that comes from the government must be passed, and they can actually be absent.
So what you're doing, what you're saying, Chin Huat, is the responsibility in the end comes back to the voter itself. The voter needs to come out. The voter needs to be politically involved or aware of what's going on. And it's if we stand back and do nothing, that's when we allow the politicians to rule the roost, essentially.
Yes, actually, more than doing nothing. I think when you do not do anything, you become susceptible to all these cynicisms and conspiracy theory because it makes you feel good without doing anything. So we need to actively do something to bring the change that we want. Stability wouldn't happen if you leave it to just all the politicians who think they can win big and think like gamblers.
Thank you, Chin Huat. Wang Chen, I'm going to leave the last word to you, and I want you to respond from like the political party's point of view on what needs to be in place for genuine coalition politics. You've spoken in the past about the trust deficit between the opposition and the government. And, you know, really, I think we can see among all political parties with each other, regardless of the coalition. Can this even be fixed?
Ideally, the candidates or the future MPs should be trained in policy, reasonableness, and that the national agenda, there must be a middle of the ground national agenda that all sides must agree. For instance, economic growth that is sustainable, you know, a resilient economy and things like that. We have to get that quality. But if the candidates and the MPs are not of that quality, what we need to do is we need to educate them in policy making. More importantly, then you've got to set the rules of parliament so that they can't misbehave outside the context of, you know, policy thinking, right? So that's what we're seeing. The MOU is trying to address issues on the select committee's role, trying to address the standing order, so that at least if we get a bunch of monkeys in parliament, the monkeys are under control of the zookeeper, so to speak. So under control of the rules. I think that's really the future of Malaysia. We have to see. You know, and NGOs out there, you have to understand this. It's a process of change. That's why I'm quite optimistic. I'm not saying that we have a lot of monkeys in parliament. I would say that the large majority are actually very sensible people, but they tend to play to the gallery, right, as politicians. Instinctively, they think anger wins votes, you know, and they instinctively think that anybody who's a moderate is going to lose. So that has to change as well. The people has to decide. Ultimately, the voters have to think, do you want to continue fighting for another 60 years, or do you want to see this country unite and progress, and that the differences between us and them could be about accountability and also about corruption issues, right?
On that note, Chin Huat Wong Chen, thank you very much for the discussion today. I think that's given us a lot of food for thought. I've been speaking to YB Wong Chen, MP for Subang, and political scientist Dr. Wong Chin Huat on issues related to the political MOU between the government and Pakatan Harapan. This has been The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.